Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner with them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience. This week's featured book is Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book, available wherever books are sold. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Grace Bonney, and you're listening to After the Jump on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen every Monday at noon on HeritageRadioNetwork.com or download the podcast every week on iTunes. Today, I'm doing something a little bit different. Normally, I have a guest every week, and we're talking about issues that face the creative community, but I thought I would do something a little different. It's just me in the studio today, and I'm talking about something that's been a big issue in my personal and work life, and something that seems to be popping up a lot these days. That is the challenge of work-life balance. Does it exist? Is it possible to cure? Is it something that actually is a problem? I've heard every possible answer to those questions, and I decided to give my own today. So for the next 30 minutes, I'm going to be sharing pretty personal stories about my life, how I've dealt with this issue, and I think how these things can help other people. And the reason I think it's a huge problem right now is because the digital creative community seems to be increasingly burnt out. Over the last year, I've read stories about people getting really sick, people burning out, people getting divorced, people quitting jobs. All of these things seem to be flooding my RSS feeds, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if bloggers are reaching a certain age where this stuff is building up. There's something in the air, but people seem to be hitting a state of needing to find a balance. And I think one of the reasons that happens is that we've become really accustomed to sharing every part of our lives. Whether you're a blogger, you're someone who uses Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, there's an incredible amount of pressure to make all of those parts of your life look good and as perfect as possible. And there's no way that's not going to eventually lead you to burnout. And I think that the other thing that's happening with this community that's interesting, that's both good and bad, is that people are finding ways to make their dream jobs happen. And whether people have been forced into that by the economy and have no choice but to try to make things work and follow a dream, those things all lead to a sort of seamless integration between life and work, which sounds like a great thing. It sounds like something you'd want to work towards. But I think in the end, it actually makes it much harder to separate life and work and have time for both of those things to be equally important parts of your lives. So I think those three conditions have led to a lot of people feeling like they have no idea how to balance those things, and maybe they should even abandon the cause. But I think there's a good reason to abandon that forever working personality and to try to find a way to balance those two. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what happened with me. I've had bouts in the ER for the last couple of years that finally led me to realize that maybe I needed to work and balance my life a little bit more. A couple years ago, I started writing my very first book, which was an amazing process and something that I think most people would agree is something you should never complain about, should never have any bad stories about. But for me, it was probably one of the hardest things I ever did. And it led to a moment where I woke up one morning and found myself unable to feel anything on the left side of my body. I was, I think, 28, and I thought, I'm way too young to be having a stroke, but that seemed like what was happening. So I took myself to the ER, sat there, and nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. I wasn't having a stroke. They couldn't identify any other sort of main problems, but it looked like I was having some sort of migraine, but without the actual head pain. Now, as a relatively healthy 28-year-old woman, it was incredibly disturbing. I took myself to doctors everywhere across the city, and every time I spoke with somebody, the common theme was, you were entirely too stressed out, you need to stop working, and you need to work out. I thought that sounded like a ridiculous answer. Clearly, there had to be a personal or a physical problem behind everything. So I kept looking until after a while, I realized possibly these doctors with fancier degrees than I have might have a point. So I started looking around to see if there were other people who had gone through what I was going through. They loved their jobs. They were happy with their work, but couldn't figure out why their work seemed like it was slowly starting to kill them. And the problem is nobody talks about these things. I couldn't find an example of somebody who was willing to admit that the job they loved and very publicly discussed as loving was maybe starting to have negative effects on their life and their health in general. And I'm by no means an expert on work-life balance, but for the last couple years, I have really started to look around to try to find people, and I couldn't find anyone to identify with. I feel like I've read every book on the topic, and so I think that my personal story, while it may not be the same as everybody else's, hopefully can be something that people out there can connect with or find a little bit of help with. And I've spent at least a year now completely rehauling and revisiting the way I live my life. Over the last 365 days, I have reprioritized the way I spend every 24 hours of my life. I've learned to let a lot of things go. And I think that that sort of letting go is something that's really helpful to see in practice. So I'm going to let you into the way I do that in my life in the hopes that you'll be able to connect with my story and maybe somebody else's who will chime in after this show. Because I think that the overall goal is really about being more present, more efficient, and fulfilled in your work and your life. And it doesn't matter what you do, whether you're a blogger or you're a chef or you're anyone else in the working world, everyone needs a little bit more balance in their life and needs to be more present in their day-to-day life. So the first step, I think, is the easiest one, understanding your goal. The bottom line is, there is no such thing as a perfect place where work and life are in balance at all times. For me, it's completely unrealistic to expect perfection of everything around you, including yourself, because everything is always in a constant state of change. None of us stay the same. None of our work conditions stay the same. As somebody who's been working online for the last almost decade, it seems insane to think about how different things were when I first started my blog in 2004. It's a completely different work environment, and the expectations are very different than they were when I started. So why should my goals be the same? So I think when you start out figuring out what you want to do, it's okay to make that really short term. The first step in any process of a major life change is really understanding that small steps lead to really big changes. And everyone's goals are going to be completely different, and that's okay. There is no universal work-life balance solution or end game. Some of us have kids, some of us don't have kids, some of us have 3 and 4 jobs, some of us just have 1 job. No matter what that situation is, they can be equally stressful. And admitting that and allowing yourself to accept that everyone's going to have different paths to getting to their own version of happy, that's the easiest way to get there. For me, my overall goal was very much like a scene from one of my favorite television shows, Parks and Recreation. A character, Ron Swanson, was telling the story of 2 jobs that he was working unsuccessfully, and he learned the lesson that it was, quote, better to whole ass one thing than half ass 2. And while it's not the most gracious way of phrasing that goal, the idea of being present and efficient and fulfilled in as many moments of your life as possible, I decided that was my personal goal. I wasn't going to try to achieve some sort of concrete thing with my work or concrete thing with my life. I wanted to just work towards really being there and being aware and being happy in the things that I was doing, whether it was something as small as taking a walk around my neighborhood or really being present in a meeting at work. So before you change and you move forward with even the grandest of plans to achieve a work-life balance goal, it's always important to remember that your goals are going to change. I once read an interview with an actress who described her biggest parenting tip as whatever works until it doesn't. And people, life, and work goals change over time. So what your overall goal is this year or this month could completely change as you get older. It could even completely change in 2 weeks. I've found that the sooner you start implementing small changes in your life and your work, your mind starts to open up and allows you to really imagine the things you actually want in your life. So if you write down a list of goals, really accept and be forgiving of yourself if those things start to change in the next couple of weeks. It's okay if what you want out of life starts to change. It doesn't mean you're fickle. It doesn't mean that you didn't really know what you want. It just means you're being more open and you're really being open to the idea of receiving different messages from yourself. That said, before we dive into the idea of making lists of changes you want to make, I personally think it's completely fine to make a list of non-negotiables. These are the things that you never want to go back to. And not everybody has these, but if you've gotten to this place of needing to make a work-life balance change, you may have gotten there because you've hit a bottom, you hit a bad place in your life, or you just hit a place where you thought, I can't do this anymore. That happened to me. I felt like I was losing quality control over things that had my name on them, whether it was my website or a book or an outside project. I took on too many things. It was completely inhumanly possible to do the amount of things I was doing and to be in quality control over all of them. So I ended up putting out things that I felt like weren't entirely the way I would want them to be. And while that doesn't sound like the worst thing in the world, for me, it felt like it. And that feeling felt so icky and so gross that I decided I never wanted to put myself in a situation where that could happen again. So I think being a little bit inflexible about things that cause you real pain or discomfort is something sometimes okay. So if you find yourself setting out and you decided, I never want to go back to a place where I work in a cubicle, or I never want to go back to a place where I have to answer to a boss who I don't think respects me, I think those are completely fine things. So while flexibility and understanding with yourself is good, also having some hard lines is never a bad thing. So now that you've got your goals and a little bit of understanding for yourself in place, I think you're ready to start making changes. And the best way to do that is to make two lists. And I literally sat down and did this, and it might sound a little type A to actually make a list like this, but I think it's really helpful. I made two lists. I made a list of short-term changes and a list of long-term changes. When I decided I wanted to try to live a happier life, I found that the short-term changes were easier to make. One of the things I did was I started leaving my laptop at the office at night rather than taking it home with me and being tempted to just keep working or just kind of zone out into that laptop haze that we all know. And I decided I'd also spend 20 minutes every morning playing with my cat, and I wanted to commit to cooking one healthy meal a day. I didn't do every one of those things every day, but I started to try to do them as often as possible. And those small steps had a very big impact on me, and they gave me a little bit of a morale boost, and that's exactly what you need to tackle bigger ideas. Because long-term goals and changes can be simple and straightforward, or they could have multiple parts. Maybe your long-term goals are to reach a certain level with your business where you could hire your first employee or hire a nanny to help you if you need childcare, or maybe you want to buy an office. All those things, whether they're personal financial success or business related, you need to just be honest about them and accept that they're not going to happen overnight and they're going to involve multiple steps. And while it's good to have all those things written out, and I think it's important, that list of small-term changes, those are really going to be the things that buoy your spirit when it feels like you're having challenges to getting to the long-term changes. So don't feel bad about really having a very long list of short-term changes. The more you start to be able to check those off, you're going to start to feel a lightness in your life and in your work life that really makes a huge difference. So embrace those two lists and be completely honest with them. The next thing I want to talk about is related to that sense of honesty, because I think there's a shocking lack of it, especially on the internet. And I think that really has to do with letting go of the should voice in your head. One of the biggest hurdles that I faced, and I think everyone faces when trying to be more balanced with your work and your life, is the sense of competition, of peer pressure, and a genuine fear of losing out on something. And I've heard that losing out on something phrase used in reference to sort of popular culture and people feeling like if they're not on the internet 24/7, they're losing out on hearing about some cool event or some cool thing. But frankly, it's far more important to feel like you're not losing out on great things in your life. So I would rather let that go and embrace something else. So I think the only way to ever really tackle that fear and that hurdle is to take a leap and see what happens. And I know that sounds easier said than done, and it can be really hard. And that's because people aren't entirely honest about it. Even when people are encouraged to be open and vulnerable, sometimes we still feel the pressure to present a version of our problems that are somehow more attractive to other people. But the good thing to remember is that those people aren't the ones who are going to be there with you when you're up late working. They're probably not going to be there 20 years down the road when you feel burnt out and haven't made choices that are honest with what you really want in your life. So if those people aren't going to factor into your life long term, their opinion about what your goals are or what your problems are definitely shouldn't factor into something as important about who you are, what you want, and what's important to you and your job. At Design Sponge, I started a weekly potluck lunch series for women who run their own creative businesses. And one of the things I thought was so fascinating about listening to their stories was how incredibly similar, but also very different they were at the same time. They were all the sort of expected universal issues of time management, self-doubt, competition, and fear, but how they handled it and what they wanted out of the end situation was very different. Some designers ultimately wanted to sell their companies and be able to move on to do multiple projects. Some people wanted nothing more than to be able to just make more money and run their own business forever and be in control of everything. And everyone's ideal realities were completely different, but no one was judging anyone. And that sense of accepting that everybody had very different paths and very different end goals felt incredibly liberating because people were really honest about what they wanted. And I think a great example of that is a couple years ago, I have a friend who, whenever one of us has a birthday, makes us write a bucket list, which seems a little silly to do in your 20s, but we all did it for a couple years. And one of our friends wrote a list. And at the top of that, she wrote, I want to be more well-known. I want to be famous. And some of us started laughing because it seemed like a kind of embarrassing or, you know, full of yourself thing to admit. And but the more I thought about it, I thought, what an incredibly honest and raw feeling to share. And it would be silly for any of us to suggest that if you run your own business, you haven't thought about hoping that more people knew what you did or what you made or what your name was. All those things are really natural human feelings. But to actually admit that, it really made all of us feel more comfortable admitting that the things that we actually wanted at the end of the day. And as soon as you've begun the process of letting go of what other people's ideas of what your goal should be, you can really start replacing that I should do this voice with your own needs and your own desires. And really being accepting of yourself and what you truly want in life and work is the only way to make that process start happening. So I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and talk about how you actually take that leap and make changes happen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers. This week's featured book is Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book by Kelly Lillian. Beautifully designed in the Pantone Swatch Book format, Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book is filled with 50 classic cocktail recipes for colorful entertaining. Internet bon vivant Miss Lillian takes a fanciful approach to cocktail making in this retro chic swatch book, which includes 20 recipes for blended cocktails, 20 recipes for shaken cocktails, and 10 recipes for punch bowls. Every classic recipe is accompanied with a modern twist and chic accoutrements. Simply fan the book out to your desired recipe, look at the card, and instantly know which ingredients the cocktail requires from the glossy four-color photographs. The gorgeous cover design is dazzling on a bar cart, coffee table, or at any cocktail party. Recipes include Miss Palmer, Miss Basil Rita, Miss Collins, Miss Julep, Tequila Granita, Brunch Punch, Senorita Spin, and many more. Miss Lillian's Cocktail Swatch Book is $14.99 and is available wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn on heritageradionetwork.com. Today, I'm doing a solo show and talking about something that's really near and dear to my heart, and that is the idea of work-life balance. And I'm of the impression that I really feel like it can be achieved, but it is not a perfect state. There is no perfect world where you will always feel balanced in life and work, but it's really about embracing imperfection and finding ways to make changes that allow you to be more present. And it's something that I've really seen start to creep into the creative community, whether you're a blogger or a maker or you run a magazine. All of these jobs seem to involve having your hands in 20 different things at once. And I feel like after doing that for a few years, it's impossible to stay a whole version of yourself. So before the break, I was talking about really embracing letting go of what other people's ideas of what your life or what your business should be and really embracing the things you actually want. And after making a list of short and long-term changes and goals for yourself, you have to actually take the step of making those changes. And taking the leap is really the scariest part of implementing any life change, because you're going to be worried that it's going to lead to your worst possible nightmare. And for everyone I've spoken to, that nightmare is the idea that everything will completely fall apart if you're not there. The bottom line? That's not true. Whether you're worried about missing a meeting or posting enough on your website or not being able to make every single one of your child's soccer games, it feels really hard to shake that feeling that everything will come crumbling down if you personally aren't there. But I can rarely think of a case of that actually happening in anyone's real life. The hard part about this is that we rarely hear or see about people taking chances like this. For me, taking chances has meant saying no to literally every work opportunity outside of my day-to-day duties at the site that have come across my desk. I had to fight a lot of ugly feelings that came up when I had to say no to things in order to make room for myself to just kind of relax, unplug, and become re-inspired. I felt disappointed in myself. I felt disappointed at missing out on a cool project, missing out on possible income or website traffic or experience. And, you know, even the ugliest feeling that nobody wants to admit, which is, you know, if you say no to something, you're worried you're going to miss out to a competitor who might take that chance and run with it and take over your business or take over the niche that you really care about. And that can be a really ugly thing to admit, but I'm going to admit it. Those feelings exist. And I think when you put them out there and you really realize that everyone feels them, they kind of lose some of their power. So I think that most decisions in our lives are really rarely make or break. Chances are when you step out on a limb and say no to something or make time for yourself, the world will continue to keep moving without you for that moment. So my biggest and best advice for the first step in really trying to find a way to balance your work and life is to just take that first step and trust that you'll be okay. Now, one thing to remember after taking that step is you have just taken the leap and there might be results that you don't love. I know some of you are thinking, well, what if things do go wrong? What if I take time off and things fall apart or something happens that I wouldn't have wanted? That's where flexibility and adjustments come into play. The first time I delegated to something to someone, which on its own was a terrifying thing to do, things did not go exactly as I planned. But I didn't lose my job. I didn't lose the results of the last 8 years of hard work. Instead, what I gained was a chance to learn from the experience. And I think it's important to remember that these first steps in changing your life and moving in a more positive direction, that they can sometimes lead to a little bit more work up front. Whether that means searching for someone to help you, taking the time to teach them how to do these things correctly when you're not there, or buying new supplies or place to put these people in these new projects, all of these small tasks are well worth the overall result of being able to step away from your work or your life more comfortably at times, because you're really not stepping away from something if you're constantly thinking or micromanaging the entire process. So even if it involves a little bit of extra work up front, put the work into it and be able to be comfortable when you walk away. For me, the most important thing to remember is that your career is rarely ruined by saying no to a single opportunity or making a single mistake. But what can ruin it is being burned out, being uninspired, and not operating efficiently or to the best of your ability. Your path to your goals might be a little longer, and it might be a little harder if you choose to work less or change the way you work. That's just an honest reality, but the journey will be much more enjoyable, and you'll actually remember to take it in all along the way to success, because if you find yourself in a place where you want to be, but it doesn't feel as good as you thought it was going to be, you've wasted your time. And I can speak as somebody who did that. I feel like I've done a lot of the things in my life I hope I would do work-wise, but when I got there, they didn't feel quite as fulfilling as I hoped, and it's because I forgot to look up and enjoy the ride. So I hope that you can avoid that by doing some of these. Now, it's all fine and great to have plans and to have lists and ideas of things to change, but those things rarely happen if you don't have a support group built in. For me, this is the most crucial step because any big changes require a support system or some sort of fail-safe to ensure success. And as much as change and your own happiness are an individual's responsibility, they're also the most successful when they're part of a group or a community effort. So take a moment to evaluate your current support system. Do you have one? Is the support system you have in place effective? I read a really, really great article in Forbes called The 6 People You Need in Your Corner that describes for me what the perfect support system looks like. It describes different personality types like your cheerleaders in your group, the taskmasters, connectors, and how they really help you in your life. And while it's probably unrealistic to expect that people have all of these people in their lives at once, working on building a support group that includes some of those people who back you up in different ways is really, really crucial. And if you live in a place where a larger group meetup of 5 or so people isn't possible, it's never a bad idea to consider an online support system or a chat group or a forum, anything like that. While I think that in-person connections are more effective and lasting over time, any connection is better than none at all. And if you really don't sort of bond with a group or you want another level, one of the things that I really like to advise people to do is to find an idol. And I don't always love the idea of idolizing another human being because people are rarely perfect. But in addition to a support group, I think it's actually really helpful to have somebody that you don't know and that you'll probably never meet for a lunch to really look up to and admire. And my own personal list of idols is pretty diverse. I love people like Gloria Steinem and Ina Garten, but I also love Carrie Brownstein and I love Ira Glass. And I think people like this that deliver a compelling message in a way that feels full of passion and interest and curiosity about life, those are the people that keep me going every day. They may not do anything related to what I do, and I definitely will never get to hang out with them or be inspired by them and have them be a part of my support group. But being able to have somebody that I look at and say, look, they continue to do that. They're following their dreams and they're not compromising. That for me is endlessly helpful. I think it's sort of an extra level of support and just a good idea to keep going. Now, Now, one thing to remember about idols, though, is nobody's perfect. And like I said before, as much as I want to believe that, you know, Gloria Steinem lives in a perfect world where her hair is never out of place and she's always balanced, I'm pretty sure Gloria's got her off moments and her bad days just like everybody else. So if you find yourself idolizing people, like if you think Martha Stewart is the greatest woman in the entire world, I bet you Martha Stewart's not perfect. And so really let yourself understand that those are people like everybody else who struggles with work-life balance, but they just maybe do it a little bit more publicly. Now, this is the step that I think everyone skips, and I am incredibly guilty of this, so I'm including this step to remind myself as much as everybody else. It's about the importance of sleep and breaks. I think when you run your own business in particular, it seems like it's impossible to find a real escape or any way to relax, especially if you live in a city. It seems like cities are built to keep you awake and keep you working, but it's crucial to build this in. Sleep is the first thing to go in everyone's schedule, whether you're a parent or a business owner or just someone trying to balance both. But I think it should actually be the last thing to go on our schedules. As much as it would kill me to miss a meal, and it would kill me, I really enjoy eating, I think it's better in the long run to get extra sleep than it is to eat or read or work or anything else. You simply cannot be your best self if you're tired. So I think one of the helpful ways to really talk about finding that balance is to take a vacation. And let's get a gut check here. You don't want to take a vocation. I've heard a lot about these lately. I've heard about people saying, I'm going to take a vacation, but they take an iPad with them and they take a laptop and they're checking in on Twitter and they're checking in on Instagram. That's not a vacation. You're not taking time off. If you're connected to four different social media outlets, you're continuing to perpetuate that need to sort of share everything. And with that comes the idea that you need to share something that's happy, that's upbeat, that's perfect, and that's a version of yourself that's maybe not accurate. I think the best way to avoid that pressure is to just unplug as much as possible and remind yourself that not every single thing has to be shared. Now, one thing that's really difficult is feeling like all those steps are crucial to success. I can tell you, I have met a number of people who've had businesses that have had true longevity and success who have never had anything to do with social media, that don't run blogs, that don't go to every meetup in town, that take plenty of vacations, and those people are completely happy and successful. I had a good friend of mine who had a meeting the other day with some people that she really looked up to, and she came home and was kind of a little bit disturbed that those women who had gotten older felt like maybe they weren't as plugged in as they should be to sort of what was cool in their industry, what was happening, what was popular, what was, you know, awesome and in the know. But I asked her, I said, but are they happy? And she said, well, yeah, they seem happy. And I said, well, do they have kids? And she said, yeah, a lot of them had kids. And we had this really interesting conversation about what is really important in life. Is it always important to be the most popular, the most up, the hottest thing in your business? No. What's more important is to really feel happy with your life. And part of that is accepting that when a lot of us are younger, those things about being cool, being happening are all going to be the things that are the most important to you. But as you get older, your priorities are going to change, and that's okay. And so I think part of that is really like unconnecting from the things that reinforce the idea that what's cool and what's popular is the only thing that matters. So really, when you take a vacation, be okay with unplugging in a very real way. Don't update something. Don't update your status. Really just let it go. So one of the things I want to talk about in closing is sort of what are the final steps of this? You've made a list. You might even make a change, even just one. And really, you're looking into building a support system. If you take nothing away from this show today, I really hope that what you will take away is the idea that building a support system, especially in person, is going to be the one thing you can do to make sure that you really work towards some sort of work-life balance. Because it's impossible to do this on your own. If you could do this on your own, you probably would have done it already. It's a very big deal to sort of up and change your life, even in small ways. So if you've got other friends, even if they're not on the same path of trying to be more balanced in life, if you've got people who know what you want to do and you share those ideas, they can hold you accountable or they can help you when you've got a rough day. So really look about building that support system and finding ways to ensure that those changes happen. And then also really be okay with the idea of accepting imperfection. None of this stuff is going to happen overnight. I've been working on this for a solid year now, and I've really made myself not work on the weekends, not bring work home, invest more time in my friends and my family, and it's been wonderful, and I feel happier than I have felt in years, but I still don't feel perfect. I mean, I'm never going to be perfect, but I don't feel perfect. It doesn't feel like everything's great. It doesn't feel like I've found the perfect work-life balance, but it's better. And what you want to strive for is a little step and a little change every week. And I wanted to share some last couple ideas to things to leave you with, whether you want to go read blogs or read books. I have three books that I read that kind of made big changes in my life. The first one is The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin, that I'm sure most of you have heard about. It started as a blog and became a book and has now become several other books. The Happiness Project is a really great idea to sort of sit down and devote time to the things that make you happy and investigating the things that don't actually make you happy. It's a wonderful book, and I think it makes a very big difference. The other one is called The Gift of Imperfection. And if you're someone like me who sort of has a type A personality and can sometimes have a hard time letting imperfections go, it's a great reminder that some of the people that you might think live the most perfect lives are the people who actually have just learned to let the idea of perfect go. And once you let that idea go, everything really starts to flow. The last one is a little bit of a change of pace. It's called The 4-Hour Work Week, which was a huge buzz book a couple years ago. And it's really about the idea of working less. Now, it may be a little like playboy for me. The guy who wrote it is a little on edge for me. But I do think the idea of young people embracing not working themselves to death is a huge deal. So whether or not you decide to really work towards a 4-hour work week or just embrace the idea of working a little bit less, it's a really fun and very quick read. So if you have time to check those out, I hope you will. And if you don't have time to check them out, I hope that you'll put time into building a support system and really taking some time to change your work and life. I really look forward to meeting a next generation of artists and designers who have found a way to prioritize their work and their creativity and being inspired as much as they are their next collections. So thanks for listening, and I will see you next Monday at noon on After the Jump.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.